Shalom Yehudim, shalom Bnei Noach, shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Yud Tes B'Tishrei, Shabbos Chol Moed Sukkot, Tav Shin Ayin Vav, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 1 October 2015, webcasting from the vortex of history. Well, the top story this week has to be the Russian presence in what's left of the state of Syria, and its airstrikes today against Assad Jr.'s enemy, and its claim to own the airspace in Lebanon and Syria, and to warn the United States and Israel to watch out. The Iranians have been open about their desire to set up in the Golan as well, a northern counterpart to Gaza, where believers can sporadically fire rockets into Israel and murder Jews at random. To the of so embittering Israel, the people will leave and the country will die, God forbid. As the king of Persia, Ahasuerus, and his vizier, Haman, plotted to kill all the Jews in their empire, so today their offspring dream of destroying the world's only Jewish state, God forbid, where to compound the offense against Islam of being independent of Islam, they even rule over millions of believers. My, my. Israel has told everybody it will not stand for Iran ensconcing itself in the Golan to do this, and has attacked some attempts already. Last Sunday, two Syrian rockets landed on Israel's Golan, did no damage or hurt anybody, and Israel responded with a major volley of Tammuz artillery at a Syrian artillery position outside Quneitra and wounded the deputy commander there. Putin responded to this right away, right after his meeting with Obama, and said that Russia would not stand for Israeli strikes into Syria, even in response when attacked. What I found annoying and even amusing are the MSM pundits this week who continue to criticize Obama for his failed policies that have led to this Russian presence in Syria. And I ask, how long must it take for some people to realize that Obama's policies only appear to be failures? On the contrary, he may be the most successful president in American history for seeing his ideology implemented. He has clearly shown himself numerous times to be incapable of criticizing Islam, linking it to the horrors done in its name by Muslims. Fort Hood, he said, was a workplace violence, and he refused to attend the Charlie Hebdo demonstration, and called Jews at the Hippocash just some folks, and when the mass head-chopping began last winter, he saw fit to defend Islam by reminding Americans that Christians had behaved badly during the Crusades. He was clearly defending Islam to Americans instead of defending Americans from Islam. He has stabbed Israel in the back. Is it not clear that when it comes to Islam, this president has nothing negative to say? Yesterday, David Cameron called him on this. And I believe that as Islam was a major influence on him. His father was a Muslim, and he himself surely lived as a Muslim for a few years as a schoolboy in Indonesia. So another influence on him was that of his mentor, Franklin Marshall Davis, the doctrinaire communist. Obama has therefore reopened friendly relations with Cuba, still under the despotic rule of the Castro brothers, notorious for their torture of dissidents. Obamacare is very much an imitation of Cuba's medical program, East Bloc-style socialism that provides free medical care. And the Castro brothers introduced that as proof of what saintly fellows they were. And as Islam is beyond reproach in his universe, so Russia has a special place in Obama's heart. And he believes the Middle East dominated by Russia is a better Middle East than the one dominated by the U.S. This is the president who exposed himself by saying, whether we like it or not, the U.S. is a superpower. Oh, words to that effect, whether we like it or not. Ergo, MSM pundits this week are criticizing Obama for his passivity and failure to resist the looming Russian and Iranian dispossession of the U.S. in the region. When I think this is exactly what he wants, he hasn't failed in the least. In Israel, there is concern, to put it mildly, about Iran's determination to emplace itself on the Golan and Russia's presence, which surely will deprive our Air Force of its traditional rule of the skies. Obama spoke at the UN this week And people were surprised. He said not one word about the Ancient Ones. First time since he became president. No reference to any Palestinians in his speech and their alleged need for state on land the Jews refused to hand over. Well, I think that's so because as far as Obama's concerned, he has won on the Palestinian issue. It will no longer concern him. In truth, he has no more cared about this allegedly archaic people than anybody on the planet. It has always been camouflage for Jew hatred post-Holocaust, and now that he has assisted the Iranians by promising to hand over an immense sum of money they can use to murder Jews and terrorist horrors and or build that atomic bomb to terrify Jews and destroy the country via the actual use or just threatening to use them, he's finished. The so-called Palestinians have always been a phony excuse, and now that he has stabbed Israel in the back with his Iran deal, he can forget about them. Whether they have a state or not means nothing to this Muslim ideologue. And that U.S. and Russian planes now may clash in the skies over Syria is only for him another cause to shrug. He has no love for the U.S., which he says is a malevolent force in the world, and he does not see that about the Russians. Remember that open mic incident back in 2012, I think in the campaign period, when Obama was telling that Russian functionary, whose name escapes me for the moment, that after the elections he would be more flexible toward Russia. And he wanted Premier Putin to know that. What was revealing, at least to yours truly, was not only the words he spoke, but his respectful and even servile and accommodating body language and intonation, what the psychologist called his affect. Think of the deep bow this Muslim dissembler, 3 months into his presidency in 2009, executed before the King of Saudi Arabia, homeland of a bin Laden still then alive, homeland of 15 of the 19 Muslim maniacs on 9/11. So thanks to this evil man, Obama, we in Israel face a much greater threat coming from the north, with the government vowing not to let Iran establish itself on our borders there. How that can be prevented is, at this stage, anyone's guess.
Yeah.
And that was yet another version of Psalm 23. Now, the other top story here this week has been the annual speechifying at the UN by national leaders. Yesterday, the Holocaust-denying mass murderer Mahmoud Abbas spoke, and Prime Minister Netanyahu was scheduled to speak this evening. I'm sure he will say many good things, or rather right things, and chastise Abbas for his speech. Is not conducive to peace, but I also expect him, as usual, not to challenge him as fully as he should. Yesterday, Abbas said he does not feel bound anymore to Oslo, but stopped short of formally tearing it up. He said he will not negotiate with the occupying regime, only in a multinational framework, and only after Israel halts all settlement activity, which he has never defined. Presumably, he means all Jewish activity in these communities, including, I guess, just breathing. He also said Israel has refused to withdraw from areas B and C as per the Oslo Accords. He's lying. Israel is violently violating, he said, Muslim rights to prayer on the Temple Mount, lying again. And above all, Israel is turning the conflict from a political one to a religious one. Oh, that's useful. He's always projecting psychologically. He's the one who's doing that. The Prime Minister's office responded by calling the speech deceitful. It encourages incitement and unrest in the Middle East. But true to form, the statement did not rebut his accusations. He accused us of being occupiers. Israel never rebuts that with the truth of international law, that the circumstances of Israel's presence in Judea and Samaria are so removed from the usual understanding of belligerent occupation as to be irrelevant. We are not occupiers. Moreover, while Israel in its behavior has always acted since 1967 in the belief of its right to live and rule over Judea and Samaria, it has never made this case in words and in public, preferring to live under the fantasy that it can hand back some, but not all, of the land taken from Jordan in 1967, and the Arabs will be satisfied and make peace. It was useful, though, that Abbas yesterday accused Israel of turning the conflict into a religious one, because this is classic. Jew haters always accuse Jews of their own sins. It's the Muslims who are stoking the fires of violence by changing the status quo on the Temple Mount and thereby raising the temperature in a religious way. There's absolutely nothing Palestinian about these punks throwing rocks on the Temple Mount. They throw them as Muslims. And true to form, the Arabs, like Abbas, when they want to raise the temperature of hatred around here, resort to religious strife. For there is nothing in Palestinian history that they can turn to. It's always the Temple Mount, always Al-Aqsa Mosque, from the days of Haj Amin to the present day. Abbas demanded that Israel move toward ending its occupation, or he threatened he would formally annul the Oslo Accords and hand over all authority to Israel and make it responsible for his Palestinians, which, when you think about it, isn't his mission. That he doesn't care about having a state. He just wants to give us a hard time. The Maharal, you know, the great Judah Levi, the rabbi in Prague, 500 years ago said, "The Holy One, blessed be he, created the Arabs with one job in this life, and that's to give the Jews a hard time." Abbas also cited in his speech the Rabin, which coincidentally, was the topic of an Israeli TV expose a week ago. citing Rabin as far back as 1976 during his first term as prime minister, when the settlement movement was a mere 2 years old, calling it a cancer in the social and democratic tissue of the state of Israel. 3 years later, in a letter in a book of memoirs by him, he called the settlement movement again a cancer. Abu Mazen cited Rabin as one who said Israel would become an apartheid state so long as the Palestinian question was not solved. Well, Rabin was also that same uneducated socialist who mocked critics of his Oslo peace plan and his surrender of two-thirds of Gaza because they said it would lead to rockets out of Gaza into Israel, and Rabin laughed at that. So what he said about settlements and cancer, we pay little attention to. Rabin was truly an uneducated boor, and therefore incapable of envisioning in Israel keeping all the land it took in 1967 without giving citizenship to all these Arabs. That doesn't make it an apartheid society. There is nothing in history or morality that requires we give them citizenship even as we take full possession of the land. On the contrary, it's functionally inhuman even to demand that Israel give these people citizenship. Why? What? I mean, these are our mortal enemies whose land under the Jordanians was used to launch murder raids into Israel for 20 years. In 1967, Israel was attacked by the Jordanians. Israel drove off these attackers. And I ask, by what moral calculus are we now required to give these people citizenship in our country to vote in our parliament? They are our mortal enemies. It is simply inhuman to demand that we take these people in. It's asking Israel to behave as no other people on earth would behave in our situation. After World War II, President Harry Truman and Prime Minister Winston Churchill at Potsdam agreed to order 10 million ethnic Germans to abandon their homes in Germany's neighboring countries and move into Germany proper, and that's what happened. When the United Colonies of North America in 1784 legally became the United States of America, thousands of people left. They left the country. Some went to Canada, some went back to England, some went to the islands in the Caribbean because they did not want to live in a country divorced from England. And John Adams, the second president of the United States, estimated that the revolution was made by only a third of the colonists. Another third was indifferent. And the remaining third was opposed. They may also have objected to England's high-handed and disrespectful abuse of them as colonists, but not so much that they wanted to give up being subjects of the crown, and especially not when rebellion against the king was not only a political crime, but a religious one. Not for Yitzhak Rabin and other provincial leftists here to imagine offering the Arabs in Judea and Samaria a status other than full citizen, the kind of second-class status that people living in American possessions enjoy to this day. Think of Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and Guam and other places. Israelis of the left cannot also see the rightness of publicly asking these Arabs to emigrate and even to offer them financial assistance to do so. And this is due to the Sub Rosa program of the secular Zionists who led the Zionist movement, which was not only to create a state for Jews, but to transform the Jews into a normal people in a country as non-denominational as any other. Asking the Arabs to immigrate would be racist. No, it wouldn't. No more than it was racist to order German nationals, 10 million of them, to move. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. We have a new security threat in the north. The Russians and the Iranians. And in the south, on Tuesday evening of this week, there were two air raid sirens as rockets were fired out of Gaza. One of them was brought down by the Iron Dome system. Air Force planes were not long afterwards taking to the air to drop bombs and blast some four structures in Gaza in retaliation. The IDF said the rocket launching was likely the work of ISIS devotees in the Strip, even though Hamas a few hours earlier had announced it no longer felt bound by the 2014 ceasefire because of Israel's aggression on the Temple Mount. Yeah. Maybe you saw that terrible video of that Haredi man walking with his children in the old city to the Kotel, the Western Wall, surrounded by shrieking Arabs, his children crying hysterically in terror. Looked like Berlin, circa 1938. In a related story last Friday, we learned of the cabinet's decision to relax the rules for Israeli defense forces in the matter of when they can open fire with deadly force against these Ishmael clones. And that was a good move. A security officer had the right to use deadly force only if he personally was threatened. Now, if anyone in his purview is threatened by a rock thrower, he can shoot. There also is a talk of administrative detention for these rioters on the Temple Mount. The Times of Israel reported on Monday that the GSS estimates 30 to 50 Arabs as the prime instigators, with the intimation that they could be arrested and detained indefinitely. I still think, though, Israel should return to its old policy of expulsion, either to Syria or just throw them over the fence into Gaza. Another tactic might be even looser rules for using deadly force, though this would take some preparatory public relations, because Israelis are so unaware of Jewish life under Islam, they themselves would first have to be educated. I would love to see the Prime Minister make a speech to the nation and to the world in which he brings up 14 centuries of abuse under Islamic apartheid laws, in which Jews were commonly the targets of teenagers with nothing better to do than throw rocks at them. And the Jews, of course, were forbidden by the same Sharia apartheid laws to fight back. But now, we should tell the world, we're back home and no longer live under anti-Semitic Sharia legislation and will not tolerate being the targets of rock throwers anymore. Israel might declare such behavior on a par with attempted murder, which it is, and thus every rock thrower is a potential target for a police sniper with a license to kill. Think of how the Iranians in 2009 put down protest demonstrations following the theft of the election by the regime. They used sniper fire. No need for a massacre. Just kill one in the crowd, and the crowd will scatter. If I were prime minister, I would flood the Arab communities with flyers, those abutting Jerusalem in particular, in Arabic, warning of the consequences of throwing rocks at Jews. The thrower can be shot dead. Instead, Israel still stumbles along, trying to come up with new tactics. The police now have built a kind of a shield on wheels, so many police can shelter behind it as they advance on a crowd. What's still lacking is the public diplomacy of an Israel no longer tolerant of such behavior. Israel must respond to Abu Mazen's accusation that the political conflict is becoming a religious one and insist it has always been a religious one, that the Muslims have been persecuting Jews every day since the days of Muhammad. But now we are home again, and we will no longer tolerate this abuse. This week, during what is in our time of happiness, the festival week, the seed of Ishmael has been making life miserable in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount for Jews. And that is something Israel must suppress, and mercilessly. Israel must say, we do not molest Muslims in their holiest city of Mecca, and they will no longer molest us in ours.
כל מקדש ויקראוי לו, כל שומר שבת קדת מחללו, שכרו הרבה מאוד על פי פועלו איש על מחנה ואיש על דגלו אוהבי השם המחכים בבניין אריאל ביום השבת קודש תיסו ושמחו כי מקב למטה נחל איאל גם זהו ידיכם קודש ואימרו לכל ברוך השם אשר נתן מנוחה אשר נתן מנוחה אשר נתן מנוחה לעם ישראל דור שהשם זה אברהם אוהבו המאחרים לצאת מן השבת וממהרים לבוא שמחים לשמרו ולערב ערובו זה היום עשה השם נגילה 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 ונשמחה זכרו תורת משה במצוות שבת גרוסה חרות על היום השביעי כחלה בין ריאותיה משובצה תהורים ירשוה ויקדשוה במאמר כל אשר עשה ויחל אלוקים ביום השביעי מלאכתו, מלאכתו, מלאכתו אשר עשה. יום קדוש הוא מבו ועד צאתו, כל זרע יעקב יכבדו, כי דבר המלך ודעתו, לנוח בו ולשמוח, בתענוגה חול ושעתו כל עדת ישראל יעשו אותו יעשו אותו יעשו אותו משוך 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 חסדך ליודעך כלכנה ונוקם נותר אל היום השביעי זכור ושמור להקם שמכם בבניין שלם באור פניך באור פניך באור פניך תביכה עיר ויון מדשן ביתך ונחל 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 עד עניך תשכם עזור 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 לשובתים בשבים בחריש ובקציר עולמים פוסים בפסיעה קטנה צועדים בו לברך שלוש פעמים צדקתם תצהיר צדקתם תצהיר כאור שבעת הימים השם אלוקי ישראל אהבת תמים אהבת תמים השם אלוקי ישראל שבועת עולמים
Lastly, two items, two pieces of business. First, the link posted for this webcast leads to an op-ed piece by yours truly that was posted on the Jewish Press site yesterday. It's entitled Krauthammer's Blunder, in which I explain how the otherwise highly intelligent Charles Krauthammer could have been so wrong in criticizing Ben Carson's rejection of a Muslim for the presidency as, quote, morally outrageous. I explain to readers, but what you all know, to be my idea of an IBJ, an Inside the Beltway Jew, who, when it comes to Israel, the Arabs, and Islam, must toe the politically correct line or be banished from Inside the Beltway. I also want to reference the choice today made in Jerusalem for the new head of the Israeli police, another kippah-wearing settler, Oniel Sheikh, who everyone praises to the skies. This is further evidence of the mutation taking place in Israeli society. 50 years ago, when I first came here, men wearing skull caps were the rarest of birds in the government and the army. Today, 50% of the officers, I think, do cover their heads and observe the laws of Moses, as all kinds of leftist political thinking drops into the dustbin of history. What's taking place is taking its place is good old-fashioned Jewishness, the way of life and philosophy of the Jewish people from the beginning that has sustained this people. Thank God. Indeed, thanking God is what the very word Jew means. The matriarch Leah named her fourth son Yehuda from the verb to thank, for she thanked God for his birth. Jews are God thankers. So I hope you all are having a good Sukkot week, and I'll be back, God willing, next Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Eretz Yisrael.